Begin after six taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to the FlixWise Podcast. I'm your host and favorite hoofer, Lady P. No relation to Master P. And joining me today is the author of the film experiences A Year with Kate series, the dazzling Anne-Marie Kelly.
Hello.
And the Twinkle Toad founder and editor of ClassicFilmFan.com, the wondrous Carrie Specht.
Good morning.
On today's show, we have our third musical submission to the FlixWise Favorites list. This time, we're going classic. Way, way classic. It's the 1936 Fred and Ginger vehicle, Swing Time. Are you guys ready to shake a leg? Yes.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Then without further ado, Carrie, take it away.
Okay, well, I will give you a quick brief synopsis of the story here. I'm not one for spoilers, so I tend to be very limited on my explanations. And fortunately for us, the description on IMDb is extremely limited. This is a Fred and Ginger, or otherwise Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musical. And the plot is very similar to most of their films. This was their sixth of 10 pairings together. And the plot is a performer, Fred Astaire, he's also a gambler, travels to New York in order to raise the $25,000 he needs to marry his fiancée, only to become entangled with a beautiful, aspiring dancer. That's Ginger Rogers. And that's it for the description. And that's pretty much all you need for the description. Most of the Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers films were a boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl in the end.
Yep.
And for a twist, sometimes it would be girl meets boy, girl loses boy, girl gets boy in the end. That's when they were being radical.
Yes.
Whoa.
Spice things up a bit.
Yeah. But in the meantime, a whole bunch of dancing and singing happens in between. This was their musicals were a departure from the backstage musical. It wasn't, hey, let's put on a show. It was more of we are performers, and therefore, naturally throughout the film, there are performance times, usually at a nightclub of some kind. Mm-hmm. Not usually at a theater. It's usually part of a nightclub scene. This is during the Depression. Most of their films were made during the Depression. And so there was a lot of dazzle of these nightclubs and the society scenes, which usually both their characters are on the outside of, trying to break into. They were representative of the hoi polloi, who were coming to see their movies for escapism. And they were the ones who were trying to break into and become part of the ritzy crowd, either breaking in and making it, or breaking in and finding out that these people are snooty and then making their own path, mm-hmm. but still becoming prosperous mm-hmm. and falling in love and getting married in the end. This is probably their last big hurrah as a screen team. It's considered their best film, though I believe that's arguable. And not too soon after this, they would start going their separate ways, particularly Ginger Rogers wanting to become taken more seriously as a dramatic actress, and Astaire just continued to do musicals with younger and younger female leads. And that's about it.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. It is. I do want to point out it is directed by one of the great directors of the time, George Stevens. Mm-hmm. And I actually misspoke. It's not of the time he would become a great director. A couple years after this, he would direct Gunga Din. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, a few years more down the line, he would direct Montgomery Clift, Somebody Help Me Here.
Place in the Sun.
Thank you.
Place in the Sun.
And Giant.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So this is a tremendous director, mm-hmm. and Ginger Rogers is quoted as giving credit to George Stevens as the reason that this film is a notch above the other Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers films. You also have a great supporting cast. You've got Eric Bloor, who is, for lack of a better description, sort of a erudite, often-sounding English man with a slight lisp. He was always in for comic relief. He often played butlers, not in this film. And he's actually not in this film that much, which is a disappointment because mm-hmm. I just love Eric Bloor. And they have this other sidekick lady, Helen
Broderick.
Broderick? Yeah. She is one of these snide, cracking dames, sort of a precursor to Eve Arden mm-hmm. Type character. And so she always says everything with a lot of wry.
Yeah.
A lot of
wryness. I thought she was so great in this movie.
Mm. Well, and she was in one of their earlier films, too, and I can't remember which one it is, but they brought her back because she was so great.
Was she in Top Hat? I think she was in Top
Hat.
Maybe. I think she was.
Yeah, it's the one where her husband was Edward Everett.
Is
that the one?
I think so.
Yeah, we should know better, shouldn't we? Yeah. And, of course, Fred Astaire is in love and wants to marry this high society girl in the beginning. He doesn't have the money. To prove his worth, he goes off to the big city and immediately meets Ginger Rogers. However, I do have to say that when you're watching the film, this doesn't happen until almost half an hour into the film.
Right, yeah.
It's a lot of setup.
Yep. And the first actual dance sequence, other than Fred performing on a stage that we only see from the side peripherally, you don't see until they meet.
Right.
Which is actually my favorite number in the film. He's dressed in wedding clothes because of that's what he traveled in. She's dressed in a very plain dress, but it's a dress that has an amazing skirt that just floats.
Mm-hmm. And I love it. She has some of her best dresses in this movie.
Yeah.
In terms of like the fabrics that they use, because when they're doing their big number up the staircase, she's mm-hmm. got that, like, she picks it up and twirls with it and it does incredible things.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I can't remember who their designer was, but they must have found fabrics that previously had not been known to man. because they fall in love, and there's complications because he's supposed to go back, and then, of course, she finds out that he's engaged, so she gets mad at him, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
hilarity ensues.
Exactly, yeah. So why Swing Time above any of the other Fred and Ginger movies?
That's a good question. It is the only Fred and Ginger film, I believe, on the National Registry.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the only one on the AFI 100 list.
National Registry, get on that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And there's not even quite 1,000 films in the registry, I don't believe. It's only in the 100s still. But it's listed as 90th as the 100 greatest films of all time. I personally have to say I don't actually agree with that choice. I think I would have chosen a different Fred Astaire. And I think I would have chosen Top Hat. And I have to say that researching this mm-hmm. and rewatching it, my appreciation dwindled.
Okay.
So,
that is the exact opposite reaction that
people is that have. Right? Is that this is funny because I actually found myself in a quandary coming here going, I don't know if I can give a good argument for this. I had mentioned in a previous conversation off air that I was watching this with my husband, and he just could not stay awake because
mm-hmm.
it is so slow paced. Mm-hmm. And I know that the other Fred and Ginger Rogers films are not so slow paced. Mm-hmm. Also, there aren't that many musical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of classics. The song "The Way You Look Tonight" mm-hmm. is in this film, and it did win the Academy Award for mm-hmm. Best Song of the Year, and it's the only award that the film was nominated for and won, and even nominated for. And there aren't that many dance numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's surprisingly. It's really surprising how few.
Right.
So I watched it, and I was just like, you know what? I just don't think I can hold up a good argument for adding this to anybody's favorite list or a list of importance. So I would love to hear what you ladies have to say.
Okay.
After you.
Well, I love Top Hat, and that is probably my favorite Fred and Ginger movie. But I will say, after having watched this, I do think that the story is concise, and I did love all the Lubitschian touches throughout the movie, the wardrobe malfunctions and the, you know, the bits that just build on themselves, like, I've got your suitcase, I've got your toothbrush, you know. So I do feel like the humor really works in this movie, and there is an emphasis on it that isn't as present in some of the other ones, like Shall We Dance? And I think the performances are great, particularly Ginger's performance is really good in this movie. But as I approach this topic, I'm like, how do you gauge which is the best Fred and Ginger movie? Which is the movie that you want to put on your greatest of all time list? Because I certainly feel that they should be represented at least once.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a huge oversight that they were not placed on the list anywhere. They are not featured. Swing Time seemed like the most obvious choice because it has the most prestigious director, as you mentioned. Very significant, long, important career in Hollywood. Made a number of classic films.
Also made Alice Adams.
Also made Alice Adams.
That's right.
Small plug. Okay.
And did he make Shane?
No.
No.
He didn't? Who did Shane?
Oh, no. He did do Shane. Shane. He did do Shane. He did. Okay. Yeah.
Shane. Okay. Sorry. So I think it makes sense that they chose this one. The Way You Look Tonight is a great song. But for me, what makes a Fred and Ginger movie are the songs.
And the dances.
And the dances. Mm-hmm. And this one, no doubt. Like, there are some great dance sequences in this movie.
But there are too few.
It's true. There are not enough. Again, that being said, I watched this movie, and my reaction was, this is, like, the greatest spun sugar sculpture ever made. Like, there's no substance, really. There's no nutritional value. But it's gorgeous to look at. And
the cinematography is really striking.
Yeah.
Especially when they go off on that little trip to the mountains.
Exactly, yeah. That's a beautiful
sequence. That black and white cinematography is amazing.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's something that feels really delicate about it. And, well, again, there's you know, no real substance. It's also really addictive, much like sugar. I found myself wanting to watch more of these movies. So I think that it is a good entryway into their filmography or their work together. So, Anne-Marie, what do you think?
I'm going back and forth on it. I had the same experience of rewatching it and going, oh, I get to watch Swing Time again, and then rewatching it and going, this isn't quite the movie that I remember it being.
Yeah.
Although I cannot tell the plot of one Fred and Ginger movie from the other. There is no difference. I think he's a gambler in most of them. Maybe he's not. I don't know. But that's not really why you watch them. You watch them to watch them dance together. And it occurred to me while I was watching it that Top Hat is usually what I would go for because it's the glossiest example. But maybe that's not what I would want from a Fred and Ginger movie. The numbers that I like them in the most are the numbers where you're not relying on how great he looks in a tux and how great she looks in, like, say, ostrich feathers. You're relying on just watching how good they are together, how masterful they are at dancing. And though few in number, the numbers in Swing Time definitely have that. The scene of them jumping over the gate.
Yeah, that's the my dance favorite number.
It's an incredible number. And neither of them, I mean, he's dressed to the nines because he's always dressed to the nines. And like you mentioned, he's in a wedding outfit because he just skips town immediately. But like they're mostly dressed down. It's not in a glitzy place. They're in a dance studio. And it has this amazing ability to feel both improvisational and very well thought out and very well planned. And that's where their best numbers came together. Mm-hmm. And also, even though it's really problematic, the Mr. Bojangles number in the decision to have the like shadows behind him replicating what he's doing, I always like Fred Astaire more when he's doing stuff like that, when he's experimenting a little bit more with how he can dance. And that is a great version of those, partially just because you see how good he was at replicating his own actions. Like those three shadows behind him are doing the exact same thing that he is doing in front. Like there's no variation. That man is a robot. I mean, that is a good thing.
And they were not shot at the same time.
And they were definitely and they were definitely
and
not
integrated.
Shot. Yeah, it's, you can see it's an error in print. You can see when the shadows cross over him, you can see that it was an overlaid shot.
Right.
And so for that, I absolutely really enjoy Swing Time for just showing off the performers rather than the big RKO set, the big RKO vinyl black floor. Like, Top Hat is beautiful, but a little bit much. There's a river that runs through the hotel for no reason. Why? Because it's Top Hat. And so Swing Time much more and that's actually what George Stevens did. George Stevens was great at honing in on what made his actors good and or dancers good and just narrowing it down to that. And I think that's what Swing Time is.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Bojangles of Harlem sequence. Did you, I suppose it's problematic, but I don't think it's as problematic as it could have been.
Right. I mean, he was. It was known that Fred Astaire was a huge admirer of Bill Robinson, who most people know as Bill Bojangles Robinson, probably mostly because of Shirley Temple films, especially The Little Colonel.
Right.
And that great sequence when they dance up the stairs together. My question, and by the way, when they were deciding on this number, Fred Astaire made a point of not doing the ridiculous white lips. He just wanted to go with tan face as opposed to a black face.
Right.
And if you look at all the backup dancers, they too, the women are tanned rather than in traditional black face.
Right.
And that being said, I always wondered, why didn't they bring Bill Robinson in on this number and have him dance with him if he's such a big fan? Was he? I know that Bill Robinson himself had moments in his career that were ups and downs, and maybe this was one of them, and he wasn't in Hollywood at the time, and he would disappear for various reasons and come back. But it's like, really, guys? You're doing this homage?
Right.
And we don't make an effort to put him in the film.
I mean, when Gene Kelly loved a dancing duo, he just brought them on with him, like in The Pirate, with the brothers.
The Nicholas Brothers.
The Nicholas Brothers.
It's fantastic.
Who then show up Gene Kelly, so maybe that wasn't the wisest choice on his part.
There's your answer.
and yeah, it could, as far as like minstrelry, as far as a blackface number goes, it's certainly not in the vein of like the Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney number from Babes in Arms. It's not nearly that level.
Or in Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Or in Yankee Doodle Dandy. It's not nearly that level, but it's still just part of a very
unfortunate
and rough tradition. And why not just bringing him on? Like, not, it's right. I would have loved to see them dancing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but do we dock points from the movie because they didn't? Or I give him some credit for at least acknowledging that this is an art form that originated in Harlem. And while I have my own spin on this, this is my way of paying tribute.
Well, and Fred Astaire, they give credit to Fred Astaire for making dance on screen more elegant. I was talking before the broadcast about Ruby Keeler and how her style of dancing was pounding.
Mm-hmm.
And that was considered the style of dancing, was pounding the boards. And when Fred Astaire came along, that went away. And anybody who danced like that disappeared. And he had this elegance, which makes you go, okay, well, where did he get that from? And part of that physicality, as physical as he ever got, which, of course, Gene Kelly is the king of physical dancing,
mm-hmm.
but as physical as Fred Astaire would get in those specialty numbers where he might incorporate the shadows or dancing on the walls and the ceilings and dancing with brooms or whatever, as physical as he might get, that came from the influence of Bill Robinson.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would dock points from it. It's a product of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that you always struggle with watching older movies that of like blatant sexism or like extreme racism. It's difficult to dock points and say this is racist and therefore bad. Like it's,
or even domestic violence,
or domestic violence, or or homophobia. Like it's a product of the time, and you can acknowledge it and mourn the fact that it exists, but you can't hold that one thing against the entire movie.
So. I don't know. I feel like we're kind of lukewarm on this movie. I don't know.
Well, the funny thing was, is I really wanted to change my selection of what I wanted to talk about. And I realized, well, I got to come up too late.
I'm a taskmaster. I forced you into it.
But in a way, I'm glad we're talking about it.
Because
it's like, we shouldn't always pick films that we know are going to actually make, succeed through the gauntlet of our speculation, of our close eye, of our dissection. Yes. Yeah, somebody who loves old movies, particularly movies. I love movies from the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a growth period. It's a changing period. You see a lot of transitions, and you see a lot of stuff that failed, and you see a lot of stuff like, oh, wait, we still use that today.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our standards of acceptance in regards to editing and or storyline and plotline comes from those early times. So when we look at these films, we shouldn't just accept them because they're old or because they have revered actors or even revered directors. We should look at it and go, you know what? It just doesn't cut it. For me, so far, and during this conversation, I'm thinking this one doesn't cut it, but I'm a little ahead of myself. So let's get to the other points.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel guilty saying this. Because, I mean, this one, as we mentioned, is the most revered of the collection. This made the AFI list, I believe, is it 90 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, other film historians have placed this one above the rest. But we don't have to follow what they believe.
No, we don't, darn it.
Yeah. If we can forge our own path. And
I'm wondering if the issue that we're having has to do with how, I guess, collected all of the Rogers Astaire movies are. Like, as a whole, you see the gigantic influence that there was it 10?
Well, technically it's 9, but there's a 10th film that is like a ensemble thing for the studio.
Right.
So it's not really a Astaire-Rogers film, but they were in a 10th film together.
Yeah, so their 9.5 films like had a huge amount of influence, even on how couples dancing worked in film, how dancing in general was filmed, how on launching careers for other dancing performers on a lot of stuff. Like, they had a huge influence on musical film, and I think that's what we're struggling with, is knowing that but not being able to choose a single one and say this is the best Astaire Rogers film and this is the film that we should work on. Like, their work as a whole, I think, is more influential than any single film that they made.
Right. I agree, and I think one of the reasons that this is revered as the best is because of the songs also that are in it. Fred Astaire's only hit song was from this film. The Way You Look Tonight. And the other songs that are so memorable from it, I think they get caught up with the revelry or the appraise of a film. But if you look at it purely, strictly in regards to a film, then it falls short.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like Fred and Ginger movies are kind of a genre unto themselves, and perhaps we need a separate metric to judge them. I don't know. I can't say that it's not a great film.
No, but I think Anne-Marie had a good point. Yeah. I think you almost need to see them all together a marathon. Yeah. And then you have the impact.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you understand the excitement that audiences had back then of, oh my gosh, here comes another Fred and Ginger film.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And that's totally how I feel. I could watch any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I will just, when I'm bored, I'll put on scenes from Roberta because I love Irene Dunne. Or have you seen that sequence in Flying Down to Reno? Or Rio. Rio, not Reno. Good God.
No, that's the women.
Yeah. And where they're on the plane dancing, they're on the wing of a plane. Like, that's delightful.
They had really creative, fun, strange. Like, it's not just Fred and Ginger on a black vinyl stage dancing. It's Fred and Ginger in roller skates dancing.
I love that bit.
And it's Fred and Ginger on ice skates dancing. And how many moving things can we put them on that have them dance? They did so many varied, fascinating, wonderful things, which still get replicated. I mean, heaven's sakes, we would not have, maybe this isn't the best example, but we wouldn't have Xanadu do if we didn't have Fred and Ginger.
Their lasting
No,
impact.
I think you can blame Gene Kelly for Xanadu.
Gene Kelly. But Gene Kelly wouldn't have had the roller skates idea.
Granted.
They did so many wonderful things together, and maybe we just get too stuck with one single idea or image of them. I also want to throw out that I love when Fred Astaire in the later part of his career started making fun of the Ginger Rogers Fred Astaire movies, like in Easter Parade, where he keeps getting the feathers from Judy Garland's stuck in his mouth.
Yes, yes. That Ginger.
Yeah, the ostrich feather dress is, I think, top hat. Yeah. But
yeah.
Just in general, just being able to poke fun at that just makes me happy.
Yeah. Let's talk about Fred and Ginger. Fred had many partners throughout his career, his favorite being apparently Rita Hayworth. But audiences were really drawn to Fred and Ginger. What do you think it is about Ginger Rogers that people adored so much?
Well, give a tip of the hat to what Anne-Marie's writing about. Katharine Hepburn was the one who said that she gives him sex and he gives her class. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ginger Rogers was really kind, in the previous films, like, was it Stage Door? Mm. She was this kind of white trash gal, wrong side of the tracks, a little bit brash and harsh. Fred Astaire, let's face it, he is not the best looking guy in the world. He's got a charisma galore, but he is a weird looking guy.
Yeah.
Now, when they dance together, I am always drawn to him. I'm always watching him, unless, like in this movie, in Swing Time, there's that one of their last numbers where she's like spinning like a top.
Yeah.
And you're like, when is she going to stop? That's like the only time I take my eyes off of him. But his movements are just so amazingly smooth, graceful, elegant. It's remarkable. So I'm always watching him. But together, it was kind of like the parts, the sum is greater than the part. Wait, what am I trying to say?
What's the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Thank you. There you go. And when they parted, there was questions of, well, how is Ginger going to do without Fred?
Mm-hmm. She won an Academy Award.
Yeah, she won an Academy Award like right the next year.
Just fine.
Yeah. And he went on, as you said, to have many, many different partners. And it really didn't matter who he danced mm-hmm. with. It was, he was fine.
Yeah.
And then ultimately he made the transition from dancing to being a supporting actor. Towering Inferno. Great part in that film.
Great.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they are so much part of film history that mostly, usually, when you say Fred and Ginger, people know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly Fellini, you know, did his ode to them. I think almost every filmmaker at some point has done an ode to Fred and Ginger in some way or another.
There is a Chinese martial arts film called Shaolin Soccer that references Top Hat. Like
there
that
you go.
That is how far reaching Fred and Ginger are.
Oh, and there was that Japanese film called Shall We Dance?
Mm-hmm.
That was a direct tip of the hat to Shall We Dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Far reaching legacy. As for what makes them specifically special, I don't know, because I've seen his movies with Rita Hayworth, and watching Rita Hayworth dance is really incredible. She was an incredible dancer. But there's something about, I don't know, there's something about them together that just works.
Yeah.
She's also as smart as he is, mm-hmm. which helps
mm-hmm.
enormously, because mm-hmm. I know we've been kind of poo-pooing on the plot sections, but it is really nice to watch her consistently, like, kind of give him the verbal smackdown.
She gives as good as she gets.
Yeah. I think without her, he could come off as kind of smarmy.
Yeah.
She sort of smacks him down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just
and he's
enough.
Attracted to that.
Right, exactly. She's not shrewish in any way, uh-uh. but she's able to kind of put him in his place.
Well, mm-hmm. which tells you that maybe she's got an edge to her, but she's a good girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In which all their films, she may have an edge. She may not be as she may not have been born to the Silver Spoon.
Right.
But she's a good girl, and she knows the way things are supposed to be amongst high society.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, final question, I suppose. Despite any criticism we may have about this individual film, do we feel it merits a spot on the FlixWise favorites list? We can say no. It's okay.
Well, even though I brought this film, yeah. I made the suggestion. I have to say no.
Okay.
For me, it's. I think I made it obvious from the beginning, and I'm sort of, in a way, regret having made this as a consideration. I wish I had considered some other film, but at the same time, I'm glad we're examining it. Yeah. I say no.
Okay, Anne-Marie.
I think I'm gonna go with no as
going
well.
With no. All right. Well, I'm gonna say yes, just because someone's gonna stick up for it. But okay, I guess that's a two versus one. So sorry, Swing Time. Perhaps we'll have to revisit with. Top Hat in a musical series to come.
I can't teach you anything.
And that's the way we frame it, FlixWise, that is. So, listeners, did we make the correct ruling on Swing Time, or do we need to pick ourselves up?
Come ourselves off.
start all over again. There we go. We should do that one more time. Or do we need to pick ourselves up?
Dust yourself off, start all over again.
Drop us a line and let us know on our website, FlixWise.com. Or you can tell us via Facebook or Twitter. We definitely want to hear from you. Also, dear listener, if you'd be so kind, please give us a good rating on iTunes. Let your fellow classic movie lovers know how great we are. On the next podcast, we're back on Sight and Sound duty with Michelangelo Antonioni's La Ventura. I'll actually be interviewing the Hollywood correspondent for Calle du Cinema, Bill Crone, on that episode. Exciting stuff. In the meantime, Carrie, thank you so much for presenting Swing Time.
Thank you for having me.
Anne-Marie, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I hope I can convince you both to make many future appearances.
Can't wait.
All right.
Yeah. Yay!
Well, that's the end of this series of musical episodes, though something tells me there might be a certain Audrey Hepburn, Rex Harrison submission if a past guest of the show, Kabir Singh, has anything to say about it. But until then, I believe that's our cue to exit the stage. So long, everyone.
Love these so much.
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.